Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
I hope if you're listening to this in your car, you just crashed. You just literally got into an accident.
I don't hope that.
I don't hope that, but if that's what you're dealing with right now, it is our fault. Hi, I'm Jamie Loftus.
And I'm Caitlin Durante.
And this is the best episode of the Bechdel Cast ever! Oh. I'm so excited.
I've never been less excited about anything.
I've been stewing in my juices for days now. I'm so thrilled to be talking about A Star Is Born with our friend Anna Hosnier.
Wow.
I blew it. I blew my freaking...
What if I just needed my turn?
I was like, she's been vibrating at the table. Oh, it's so good. Every song is almost good enough to be a real song.
They are real songs.
By the wayside. I was like, this song actually kind of slaps, but it's not quite a real song. Mm. Oh, I love it so much.
So, hey, here we are. We're the Bechdel cast. We talk about the portrayal and representation of women in film. Whew. We use the Bechdel test to initiate a larger conversation about women in film.
Hey, what's that?
The Bechdel test It was founded, invented, created by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, and it requires that a movie has two female-identifying characters with names. They have to talk to each other. For at least a two-line exchange, and their conversation cannot be about a man.
Well, good luck with this franchise. Okay, so wait. We should do a dry run of the Bechdel test.
Okay, let's do it.
Hey, Caitlin, will you ask me a question, and I'll ask you what to ask me?
Wait, what?
It's passing so far. Just say my name.
Okay. Hey, Jamie.
Okay, Caitlin. If I ask you to ask me a question and give you the copy, will you ask me that question?
Yes.
Okay, here's a question I want you to ask me.
Okay.
What do they have in Arizona?
Hey, Jamie.
Yeah.
What do they have in Arizona?
Nuts, Navajos, and nowhere to go.
That was a long way, but that all passed.
Yeah, that all passed.
That passed the Bechdel test.
That was great.
Thank you.
That was the longest pass. That's like a full conversation with someone. Like, okay.
In the history of cinema.
Yeah.
My favorite part about the Bechdel test is it doesn't have to be good writing. No. It just has to be writing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the wayside.
Hey, should we introduce our guests?
Yeah.
Okay.
We sort of did, yeah.
Right. Well, let's give her a proper introduction.
Papa.
She's a friend of the cast. You've already heard her on our She's All That episode. Mm-hmm. She is one half of Ethnically Ambiguous, mm-hmm. and she's a producer here at How Stuff Works, Anna Hosnier.
That's right, and I sleep under the table every time you guys record.
True. So here we are talking about the 2018 A Star Is Born.
And this is quite a hot request, mm-hmm. which I think is one of the only reasons Caitlin agreed to do it.
And also, I blackmailed you guys. I will be the guest, and that is that.
I do have a memory of you walking towards us as you were like, "We're gonna do A Star Is Born, right?" And then two nights later, we were in the theater, fully reclined.
Guess what? I bought tickets ASAP. I bought tickets for everybody. I was like, "Great, we're going!"
And sent us a paragraph long Venmo request.
Yes.
It was like
I was prepping you.
It was gorgeous.
You guys had to like ask for my permission. You guys were like, "Please, can we do A Star Is Born? Please."
Because we knew you were going to do it, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, you were like, "I'm not excited to see this." Like, that was the first thing you said when I got in the car. I was like, "Oh, this is going to be fun. Take a hit of weed." And you're like, "No."
I was like, weed gives me panic attacks. I'm very cool.
You're gonna love this movie, Kayla.
Oh, me, I smoke weed in the back freaking seat on the way to Star Is Born 2018.
Okay, so Jamie and Anna, you've both prepared, I would say, more than adequately. Mm-hmm. So,
but I still feel completely all over the place.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to be clear.
Got it.
Not in organized prepared, but I have all the thoughts I need.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
So Anna, what is your history with this film or the general A Star Is Born franchise, if you will?
I mean, as you know, this movie is a remake of a remake of a remake of a remake of a remake. Mm-hmm. And the original film was actually called What Price Hollywood, which was the original one no one's seen because who cares?
It was a Selznick joint.
Yeah, exactly. Who, little known fact, was the son-in-law of Louis B. Mayer of...
Notorious
the,
rapist.
Yes.
We could say that about almost any male executive of that era, but...
Yeah, he was a film executive and he... Yeah. They're all rapists.
So
then the film that was remade based off What Price Hollywood was A Star Is Born with Janet Gaynor.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen that version.
That was from 1937,
yes,
correct?
Yes, 37. That's okay. A little too far back for me. I took a 30s film class in college, and I was like, yawn, enough of these Joan Crawfords, okay?
Oh, yikes.
And I, you know, I was never a fan of that whole censorship era.
Oh, the production
like,
code.
It long. Cut.
Well, it lasted from the mid-30s till the late 60s, so.
Yeah, and interest.
I've seen the 37 Star Is Born. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah.
Didn't commit. But one of my favorite fun fact about that Star Is Born is Dorothy Parker helped write the script.
Oh.
Interesting. I just feel like women usually are involved in writing the scripts, which is so interesting because the woman has no power. But, And then I saw the Judy Garland one a while back.
Oh,
it's like 3 hours long. Mm-hmm. I recommend it if you like.
Have 3 hours?
Yeah. Have 3 hours or ate a very strong edible and can't move. That one I think is the best because I've seen the Barbra Streisand one and I actually rewatched the Barbra Streisand one last night and God damn is Streisand a mess. That's, I think, the worst one because I listened to a podcast, you must remember this, about the making of A Star Is Born, the Barbra Streisand one, mm-hmm. and boy, it was not good. She was a real bitch.
She led
Kris Kristofferson to drink like a bottle of tequila a day, so he just basically became the guy that
Barbra.
The movie was. And it
maybe
wasn't
Babs was just being method.
And apparently she cut her own edit at the end that had her basically include more shots of her ass. Because she was like, my butt.
So she's like, there needs to be more male gaze.
Yes.
I do kind of love, like, I wish that every actor demanded that they got their own cut. I want to see, like, what is the Taylor Lautner cut of Twilight 2?
It's just all his ass.
It's just more of his, I think maybe it's not even gendered. It's like, you're like, this is my movie. My ass should be in it as much as possible.
Exactly.
I get it.
Ass. Yeah, that's basically what it's like.
Got so many shots to get your ass in front of a big crowd. I get it.
She's insane.
Okay.
I've also seen the 76 one. I could not get through it this time. I got 45 minutes. It's such a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it even looks like it looks like a mess on the set. I was just like, what is it? It's oof.
Whew. And now you both have seen this 2018 version twice now?
Yes.
Okay, great.
We've seen all of them.
Well, yeah. Good job. You're way more prepared than I am because I've seen Bradley Cooper's A Star is Born one time.
Honestly, catch yourself some
Yeah, you know
I
what?
I feel like that's big.
Thank you.
It's not your genre.
I don't know if you recall, but I did watch all 6 Mission Impossible movies to prep for the
episode
we did. So I'm coming in not having a whole ton of background for this film. And it's because, I don't especially like this genre. This is going to make me sound psychotic, but I don't like to watch people sing. I think it's so boring.
That's quite normal.
Okay.
Some people find musicals completely uncomfortable. Like they can't like
I'm not a huge fan of musicals. I wouldn't classify this as a musical because all the music that's happening in this one is diegetic. Is in like it's happening as a part of the story and they're like not breaking out into random song. So, and at least if there's like a song and dance number, it's like there's fun, there's choreography. Mm-hmm. This one, we're just watching people sing and I could not be more bored. And this is not for me. But I did enjoy the first 30 minutes. Yes, Jamie, you're raising your hand. You have a question.
My history with this movie.
I love Judy Garland so much. She was my hero when I was little. I feel like all young queer people / very, very, very quiet young women, for some reason, there's something about Judy. I would record all of her movies on Turner Classic and it would be to the point where it was like my family would write it on the calendar, Judy Garland's birthday, because there would always be a 24-hour marathon.
Would you take a cake to school every day?
No, I wouldn't talk to anyone at school, but one of my parents was like usually home and so they would switch out the VHS tape to start recording the next one. So I've seen every Judy Garland movie ever. Amazing. Love her so much. And then I wanted to, you know, experience the Judy Garland extended universe, and so that's why I watched the other Star is Borns, to be like, I know that she was the best one, but let me just cross-check and confirm.
And check.
And then I found out Dorothy Parker helped write the first one. I was like, oh, and then Joan Didion helped write the Barbara Streisand. There's like a lot of famous women writers involved.
The interesting fact about that is she started to write it and then Barbara Streisand was so hell, she left. But because she was like still like, you know, credited as a writer, she made more money that she'd ever made in her entire life off that movie, basically.
Yeah.
So like, she was like set for life, and all she had to do was like meet with Barbara like 5 times before she was like, this woman.
Which honestly sounds like worth the amount. So any like story of Barbara Streisand on set of anything, you're like, holy shit, this is a lot.
What a legend.
She truly a diva. But yeah, I love this movie. But I think I just wanted to say I love Judy Garland.
Sure. And I think between the three of us, we've seen the trailer maybe 500 times.
Yeah.
So
I do recall when that trailer first appeared on my YouTube. Like
I remember when it first appeared on your YouTube.
Yes, because I think I brought it to you guys. And I was like, have you seen this? And then we proceeded. I made you watch that. I made you watch that and a bunch of like weird Mark Wahlberg films. But don't worry about that. I haven't stopped watching it.
I'm glad you guys have had a great time with this so far.
I have a somewhat unhealthy relationship to the part on the trailer where Lady Gaga starts her like full Lady Gaga moment.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Mm-hmm. And then when it was coming up, that whole scene, it's almost like the scene, like whoever is editing it is like, oh, people are going to be so excited for the part where she just yells. And so he makes you wait for it and wait for it and wait for it. And then she finally hits the mic and you're like,
I think we all like grabbed hands in the theater.
And we started levitating 5 feet off the ground. Yeah. It was crazy.
I do remember when it was about to happen, an old man got up to go use the bathroom and I was so fiercely offended. Like I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
You're
She's about to walk
bits?
On stage. Yeah.
Oh, it was
if you're listening, sir.
You've made a great
He's our error. Biggest fan. Yeah. So.
I just love it. Is this the A Star is Born's universe or A Stars Are Born or A Stars Are A Stars is Born? What would you
Oh, how do you
what would you refer to this expanded universe as?
A Star Is Born?
A Star Is Born. A Star Is Born? The stars are born.
Born stars.
Yeah.
Born stars. I like that.
That's like porn stars.
A Star Is Bjorn.
A Star Is Bjorn would have been a great one. Missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. That for this round, because this film, it's not even a franchise. This story that refuses to die generally was like coming up once every 20 years. Mm-hmm. And they skipped the 90s,
yeah,
which would have been a great Kurt and Courtney adjacent, but they didn't. They skipped the 90s.
Right, but it was originally supposed to be Clint Eastwood directing with Beyonce attached.
Yeah, and then Will Smith was attached, I think, as whoever.
For this one? For the 2018 one?
Well, the one that was in the works before this one, you know, came out with Brad.
Which, every version who's played, it was Esther for the first three.
Mm-hmm. No, I think Judy Garland, then they make it like Vicky or something?
No, they change her name in most of them. There's like a few things they don't do in this movie she normally starts as Esther Blodgett.
Okay.
And then they change her name to Vicky Lester.
Got it.
To make her like hot.
Mm.
But this time she starts as Allie. And we'd never find out her last name. And then they don't change her name. And then she's Allie.
It's because she isn't important until her last name is the man's last name.
Well, and that's something that happens in every movie, too. There's a few. We'll get into. There's a few things that happen in every version of A Star Is Born. And they're all regressive. And Cooper could have done something about it. Cooper?
Also, who decided that Vicky was the fuckable name?
Vicky. I'm Vicky.
My name is
like a vixen.
Yeah.
Shall I do the recap?
Please.
Yes. I'm not going to do a good job because I've only seen the movie once and I...
Don't worry.
You've got,
we'll
fill
asterisk
in
it.
The blanks. Okay. So, we meet Jackson Maine.
Jackson Maine.
He's a country... question mark
country. Well, his
singer?
Songs sound a little bit like
kind of rock
like
and roll
this.
Country.
By the wayside, but people like, love it.
He's like country rock.
He's like a Willie Nelson of sorts.
Yeah,
but like hot and he's such an alcoholic that all the blood is at the surface of his face the whole movie. It's distracting.
So we meet him. He is a famous musician, but
not at his peak.
Not quite at his peak.
Well, it seems
I don't know.
He's already peaked, and now he's on his way down off the peak.
He's playing festivals.
Right, but I think he's playing festivals because he's like a legend in that sense, but he's at this point on his way down.
He's still famous, but he's not at his peak anymore. He gets off of a gig, he goes to a bar where there's a drag show.
He literally goes to the Virgil in Los
Angeles. He goes to the Virgil, a bar that we've all been at many, many times.
I've eaten shit into that very microphone. It's wild.
Yeah. So there he meets Allie, Lady Gaga's character.
Who sings La Vie en Rose.
Yes, and he's smitten with her, and he waits for her after the show.
He peels off her creepy tape eyebrow.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, is that your real eyebrow?
So many of his lines spoken like out of context, you're like,
is that your real eyebrow?
No. Nobody. Like, no.
If he wasn't a famous musician and just creepy drunk guy, like bloated, drunk guy, like,
thrown out the window.
And we'll talk about that because that is certainly worth talking about.
Or like a scene later, he's like, can I touch your nose?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, stop.
Yeah.
Right. So they hang out the rest of the night and he finds out that she's an aspiring musician as well.
Lady Gaga punches a cop.
She punches a cop. They go to a grocery store to get some frozen peas
scene.
They are bonding and he's like, hey, why don't you come to this gig? And she's like, no, I can't. And then she goes anyway.
Oh, quick trailer talk. So Anna, this is your specialty. I forgot the famous much memed trailer moment of
I just want to get another look at you.
And she goes, that's how I would. That's the noise it goes with that face. She's like, But that is also spoken in at least the Judy Garland version.
It's in the Streisand one too.
Oh, is
that's
okay.
A thing they pulled as well. That whole just want to take another look at you because I'm weird.
In every other incarnation, the actor in question separates the words and doesn't say the whole sentence as if mm-hmm. it's one word.
Right.
But that's just kind of the Coop's take on the sentence, is it's just a word. And the word is, I don't want to know
you. Well, it could be because he is drunk, because his character is an aggressive alcoholic.
Yes. But even when he's sober, he's still
kind of slurring.
You know that scene at the piano where he's like just got out of rehab, but he's like, hey, was he? Yeah. I've been playing with the dog outside, wrote your song. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, he still can't talk.
Like, all his reactions are like, sorry, what was that?
He's so famous, no one will ever tell him.
Yeah.
It's like, I think part of his character is like, he doesn't know he's weird to an extent.
Yeah.
Because he's been famous for so long that he just doesn't know he's weird.
Yeah.
Because everyone's like, oh, Jackson Maine, sign my titties, Jackson, you know.
Yeah.
So basically they start to hang, or like the second time they hang out, she goes on stage at one of his shows and like sings iconic. The song, and that's the iconic.
And then he goes, I wrote an arrangement, not very good, but he won't come on stage to sing with me.
That was low-key bullying. He shouldn't have done that.
Right. And
he's like, otherwise I'll plagiarize you and say this is my song. I was like, well, the stakes are, there they are.
Right. Yeah. So she's basically forced to go and sing her song on stage with him. And this starts to kind of propel her music career forward, because people see it and people take video of it. And then there's a bunch of YouTube views and people start to take notice of her. Mm-hmm. And as that's happening, they're developing a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, some struggles along the way, because he, again, is suffering from alcoholism.
Damaged. Yeah, there's nothing like having to always wait for your significant other to wake up from his drunken stupor so you can hook up.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, he's passed out now. All right, I'll just wait till he wakes up. No, it's fine. It's fine.
HMU, 2 p.m. tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
Okay, 5 a.m.? Okay, cool.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Yeah. And also, Sam Elliott is Bradley Cooper's brother, and he's 30 years older. This is a plot point that never... I was like, why couldn't he... Like, why does the brother have to be elderly? But he is.
And yeah. Sam Elliott's character is his, like, manager, road dog buddy. And he's always like, you need to take better care of your hearing, because Bradley Cooper's character's hearing is compromised.
He's got tinnitus, it sounds like.
See, I don't know that this is an Arizona farm boy accent, but Sam Elliott talks the same fucking way Bradley Cooper does.
Bradley Cooper is doing a Sam Elliott impersonation to Sam Elliott.
Because Sam Elliott comes, there's one scene that you can't make a word out the entire thing, but Sam Elliott walks up with Bradley Cooper's hearing aid, and he's like, Jack, I gotta put this in, you're not gonna be able to hear no more. And then
there's... that one scene when he walks up to punch him, and it's just a shot of their two faces, like, just right in front of each other.
They're barking at each other.
What the fuck are we doing
here?
This
movie should have been subtitled. Yes.
Yeah. for drunken men. Yeah. Like, women do not get drunk in this movie. It is only useless men who get drunk. And then later on, I got confused. There was a part where I was like, Sam Elliott works at SNL now? Because she's on SNL?
Right. Why is he there?
He said he was like, on tour with Will and Alan. Thought I would stop by and see how she's doing. And he's like, what? What's that? What? Like, he can't hear anything.
Because he has tinnitus. He's damn it. You know how, like, when you have tinnitus, you can just treat everyone in your life like trash?
Yeah.
So then at some point, Allie and Jack get married, but he's showing no signs.
Dave Chappelle's there. It's a whole thing.
Right.
And Eddie Griffin.
Eddie Griffin's also there.
Griffin makes it. Okay.
He rolls through. Everyone's at the wedding.
Andrew Dice Clay is Allie's dad.
Andrew Dice Clay explains YouTube video counts at one point. It's a great movie.
He's like, you know, that way for everyone. That's how many people seen it.
Yeah.
I watched it 200 times. I was like, oh, this is great.
It's unclear. I'm still not sure where this movie is supposed to be taking place. I've reached the conclusion it's Los Angeles.
Yes, I believe so.
Is it?
But why are they talking like newsies?
I thought she was upstate New York because they all have New York accents.
But then they get on a motorcycle and go to Arizona.
Yeah, in like 20 minutes.
And right. They get there like 2 seconds late. So I'm like, they didn't drive across the country.
No.
But then when Lady Gaga goes in the house, she's like, where's the butter? No, what the fucking
yeah,
thing?
Exactly.
It's like, this is not New York, I don't think.
Her accent comes and goes like it's nothing.
Let me introduce you to the concept of moving. Yes. People sometimes move from one location to another.
Huh. Expand on this theory. I don't know.
There's
some
inconsistencies where she lives.
But then she made it sound like they had lived in that house her whole life. Like she was like, Dad, how many times you carry the piano up for me? Oh my God. Okay, so this has been a thing. A Star is Born, the mystery of where Lady Gaga's character lives, starts a hilarious debate among film critics. Okay, so this has been a point of contention. We don't know where anyone's from. I don't think that's how people from Arizona sound, but I'm not very well informed.
I was also trying to gauge where they live together in that house of his. Is that like supposed to be like the Hollywood Hills or something?
I thought so.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because at one point she goes like, I have to play the Forum tonight. Will you meet me there? And then she leaves. So it's like clearly if you're somewhere else in the woods.
No, I think they lived like L.A. ish.
Yeah.
Or some, I don't know.
She's like, oh, meet me at the Forum in 2 hours. And he's
right.
Like,
oh, and he's like, and then he says, hey. And she says, what? And he says,
I just want to take you.
But this time it's sad because he's going to kill himself.
Right. Okay. So,
oh, sorry.
Basically,
spoiler.
As she's advancing in her career, he is, you know, still drinking a lot. He becomes verbally abusive at different points. He's jealous.
He rubs a bagel on her face.
Oh, or there's some sort of paste. A lot of icing ends up on faces.
Bradley Cooper's got, I'll go on the record, he's got a thing with the cake on the face. There's a lot of cake on the face in the movie. Every top-billed actor gets some cake on the face. Dave Chappelle gets cake in the face. Mm. I don't know if Eddie Griffin gets cake in the face, most people get
lines.
Cake in the face.
Then she wins a Grammy because she's become so famous. She's at that point in her career.
I thought it was a nice touch that Lady Gaga dressed like a Grammy because that's what Lady Gaga would do.
Oh, yeah.
Her dress is like a Grammy dress.
But at this awards ceremony, Jack is so drunk that he like stumbles up onto the stage and then pisses himself like on
classic.
Camera, on the stage. And
which, watching now, I don't know why I was like for sure Bradley Cooper method pee-peed himself, but it's definitely a post-pee-pee. It's a pee-pee-pee-pee.
Okay. It kind of looked like he had a tube. Like a tube that was like, we're gonna excessively pee-pee.
I don't know. You know how you can just sort of tell? Well, I'm a hacker, so I can tell when things are computer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure it was computer pee-pee.
You think he wouldn't actually have pee-peed himself?
No, I think maybe he tried, but he got nervous. Oh.
I thought there was like a little pee-pee, little tube pee-pee.
A little pee-pee?
See, I think it was a practical effect. I think that's what
really?
I thought. I feel that way,
I feel like this is what I love about movies like this. Someone knows, or someone is in the process of trying to find out what the deal with the pee-pee is.
Bradley Cooper is known for being a practical effect genius.
Genius. The Hangover.
He's basically James Cameron.
All that he just laid in the sun for 10 hours for that facial, whatever was going on. It's like bloated red face the whole time.
Yeah. I love it.
Okay, so at the award ceremony, he pees himself and then he's like, oh crap, I've hit rock bottom. Better go to
he
rehab.
He goes, oh, pee-pee. I went. And then...
oh, pee-pee.
Oh, pee-pee.
Oh, pee-pee.
Have I hit the rock bottom?
Levia knows pee-pee.
So he goes to rehab. And Allie's all like, I still love you. We can make this work. You're going to come back home, right? And he's like, yeah, I think so.
And it was you that said she way overdresses to go to rehab. Right?
Yeah, I didn't think her outfit was appropriate for rehab.
No, sure.
It was a lot.
He gets back home. He's in recovery. And her manager, whose name is Rez Gavrin, I believe.
Literally so British villain.
Yeah.
British twink villain.
I've heard of you, and I would like to sign you.
And then she's like, Interscope Records. And then he literally goes over to Bradley Cooper's house. He's like, oh, it would be real help if you killed yourself.
He basically tells Jack that he has ruined Lady Gaga's career and that they've had to do like so much damage control. So Jack, this prompts him to commit suicide.
Ugh, there's so much to unpack.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like the British guy.
Yeah.
And then there's like a tribute song at the end where she's like, I'm Allie Mayne. And she sings a song and everyone's sad.
This is a ritual. This is the end of the movie. Ritual.
Yeah. let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and watch A Star Is Born again. Let's take a quick break and then we will be right back.
Yay.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
And we're back.
Okay. So where do we want to begin with this? Because I just have so many thoughts and I don't know where to start.
Well, I personally would like to draw attention to Jack's behavior in the beginning of the movie, where I think we can apply the Buscemi test to this, where early
apply the not super, like you were saying, like the not super famous guy. I think if someone that hot who is a nobody was doing that shit, people would also not be having it.
No. Sure. I mean, basically, after they've known each other for less than 24 hours, he's like, hey, come to my gig tonight. And she's like, I can't. I have to work. No thanks. And he's like, please, though. And she's like, no, I can't. She's telling him no several times. Mm-hmm. Then he sends his driver to her house to pick her up.
To follow her.
Right. And then she's like, no, I can't. But then eventually she decides to get on this private jet and go to this gig after all. Mm-hmm. And then a few scenes later, she's sleeping in her bed and she wakes up and Jack is there. And she's like, why are you here? And he's like, oh, your dad let me in. Here I am. So this is like
Dice, what are you doing? Respect your daughter, you Dice. Why, what the fuck are you doing, Dice?
Back in my day, I was a real crooner.
Classic. A good line read by Dice. We have to remember he is one of comedy's most notorious misogynists. One of the most successful misogynists in the entire industry. Good for him, though. He did a couple good lines. Yeah. My daughter.
Yeah, he had a great line at the beginning where he's like,
piano.
Take a look at her. To all his like buddies, you know, some with the most talent, they just don't make it. It was like, you fucking asshole. Like,
literally after she comes home and starts cleaning up after him and his gross friends. Although I think it was super producer Sophie who said that Dice is squatted in every scene in this movie. He's got like no less than four old men with him just like being like, Dice is the fucking... I feel like that's his like real life entourage. He's like, I don't come on set with less than four fucking gross dudes.
I could not figure out that was Dice to save my life because I realized I'd never seen Andrew Dice Clay's eyes because he always wears those sunglasses. Shades. And that was fucking me up until the last scene of the credits. And I'm like, it said Andrew Dice Clay. And I like felt like a fucking idiot. It really actually took me out of the film a little.
It took me a couple scenes to figure out it was Dice, which is too bad because I think that all of us right now could play his girlfriend in a thing. I think we're all about the right age.
I have to tell you guys, my boyfriend is Andrew Dice Clay.
Anna?
You know Dice?
Wow. I know Dice.
Dice is my daddy, but you know what I mean.
I'm so sorry about that fucked up stuff I said about Dice.
In any case, the behavior that Bradley Cooper's character is doing is troubling. It's stalkery. It's predatory. But because he is a man with fame and power and influence, she's like, ooh, how romantic. So
I was truly surprised how quickly they just started making out. I was like, really, though, girl? I mean, you don't really know much about him other than he's a famous person and seems drunk as fuck.
I feel like they try to work around that by saying like, oh, she does at least go to work, but then someone's like, you're fucking late, and she's like, I fucking quit, and then she gets in the limo that followed her. I don't know. It didn't, and this is kind of like the inception of this relationship changes. I think there's versions of it where it's done better in past Stars Born, and there's also versions where it's like way creepier. But the first two Stars Borns happens between actors. This one and the Streisand one are musicians.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually starts with like them, they meet. She's a little girl from nowhere who just moved to Hollywood to become a big star.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an extra and she's a waitress and the whole bit. And then he like gets her an audition, which is less creepy than sending someone in a vehicle to follow her around. Yeah.
I feel like they're really trying to push the like, this is an undeniable love situation. But that didn't work for me. Like I didn't believe that they were like undeniably attracted to each other and were just being pulled without their control to each other, and that's why they started like, you know, almost hooking up almost immediately.
Yeah,
like, I didn't trust the way it was done in the movie. I didn't believe it necessarily.
There's so much in all of these stories, but speaking to like the 2018 one as well, that like there's so many elements of this story that go completely unexplored. And I think that like one of the greatest weaknesses of this story is that it like sort of doesn't give its the star who is born, aka the one woman in the movie who talks really, enough. Not even like, it's like Lady Gaga is very present in this movie, but there are certain elements of her personality that go totally unexplored because this character, the Esther Blodgett or Allie, who fucking knows, is like the woman who stands by her man. And it's like the message of this whole franchise is like, hey, if you're in a relationship with an abusive alcoholic, hang in there.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll die. Like, it's just not good.
Oh, God.
But there's a few, like, okay, some things that occurred to me, and I haven't done a lot of reading about this Stars Born just because I've been too busy watching it over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But some things that occurred to me about Allie and Jackson's relationship that we never address, aside from being in a relationship with an addict, which we can get to, because that is like way glossed over. Like, he was mean to her one time. I'm like, that's not how that.
No.
But one thing that's never touched on is, you know, the power dynamics in this relationship from the jump are off, and they're off in every incarnation of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't even know where I land on this, but there's some times where I'm in the story where I'm like, well, Allie, like, probably would feel weird leaving him early in that relationship, even though he's clearly a fucking mess, even if she does like him, because her entire career is dependent on him, which is a power dynamic he introduced. But, you know, I think that adds some complexity to her character if it's not just like she's so in love with him and she can't leave because she loves him so much. It's like, well, what if she sort of wants to leave, but her entire career is tethered to this one person? Like, that's something that happens in the first half of the movie that I thought would have been at least interesting to acknowledge. But that power dynamic is never. They're like, well, they love each other, so it's a wash.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he ever does anything to, like, promise that he's gonna like uplift her career and get her to where that doesn't happen, right? He's not always like, I'll get you far.
He does that in the other versions, but I mean, it still feels pretty heavily implied. Like, if she left that tour, it's not like she could just, you know, like, I think the story would have you believe she needs to be on tour with him at the beginning and, you know, establish herself as his sort of like right hand singer before she can become, you know, and meets everybody she has to meet, and then she can take off on her own. But she couldn't have technically started on this path in this story without him. And that's like just sort of a dynamic that they don't acknowledge at all.
Right. And I'm not saying that this thing happens in this 2018 one. I'm not familiar enough with the other ones to know if this happens, but like it's reminiscent of situations where someone like Harvey Weinstein targets a young up-and-comer who's like, I'll take you far if you just come to my hotel room, or, you know, like,
right,
making promises, and what they're really doing is just manipulating and abusing, coercing, and ruining their lives.
Right. It felt like, sorry, there was a selfishness to his behavior in the sense that he actually didn't want her to grow beyond being a singer with him.
Yes.
Right. And that's when he starts to get the cake. That's when the cake is in the face.
Yeah.
Right. When she starts to out-achieve him.
And she does call him out and is like, you're jealous, but it's like, okay.
I do like the part where she lets him headbutt a TV. Yeah. That's fun. Where she's like, you want to play? Let's fucking play. And then he headbutts a TV and she's like, what?
Oh, and then just like passes out into it?
Yeah, and then right. She gets the cake off her face. She goes, what the fuck is this? I love this movie.
I did want to see more. See, that thing is like a lot of her attitude came out in the beginning and then sort of just became passive at the end. Like she didn't defend herself. She didn't stand up for herself. She just kind of went along with what people told her
to
do.
That's the thing. Like she doesn't have much agency in this story. Things happen to her.
Right.
But she's not necessarily. I mean, you could say like, you know, the hard work she's put into being a singer and, you know, working on her craft. But we don't really see that. The story picks up basically right before she's propelled to stardom. So.
We at least get the moment of like, we know she's good enough. She has what it takes. It's not like they need to fake her talent at any point.
Right.
Which I appreciated.
Sure.
It's not like what's that fucking movie with Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant, Florence Foster Jenkins. Oh. It's not a Florence Foster Jenkins sitch.
Right.
But yeah. But everything happens to her.
Yeah. So she's not necessarily going out and making active choices. And arguably that's because it's Bradley Cooper's character who's the protagonist of the story, who's driving the narrative. But it would still be nice to like to see her, I don't know, just be more active in the pursuit of something.
Right.
But it's a lot of stuff happening to her and her kind of rolling with the punches.
Yeah. It does seem like there's this overall like male savior vibe throughout the entire film. And like it's very broad because it starts with him, you know, giving her her first break to like that guy being like, I'll make, you know, sign the Interscope Records. And then it ends with him killing himself because he's like, I'm doing this for you so you can go on and live your life without
so I
being dragged
keep you myself
down
again.
Yeah, like I'm here for, like, this is all because of you. I'm trying to make your life better. And it's like she could have easily have succeeded fine and gotten her life together and had also, you have not killed yourself.
And also it's 2018. She could have divorced
yes
you.
Right,
like there's a lot of like missed like 2018 things that you're like you would think that it would go more challenged but just doesn't. It's which is, I mean, I don't know, I still love the movie so much so yeah. It's hard but there's so much where it's like she really doesn't have another element. Okay, another, I think we've already talked about this because we've been talking about this movie for a week, where Allie does, I mean, we see the sort of song she's writing at the beginning. She's, and then when she becomes a pop star, that goes away. And all of a sudden she's like, why would you do that to me? It's, all the songs are good, but they change, right?
Yeah.
She becomes a pop star. And there's one scene, because she does, she sells out immediately, which is not even a comment on the character because we don't really know her well enough to know what her code of ethics with this is.
Sure.
But, you know, the British guy is like, you got to dye your hair and learn to dance. And so she does. And then there's one scene, the one scene in their entire relationship where Bradley Cooper is an alcoholic and mean to her. He comes in, she's in her fucking Grammy bathtub or whatever, and he's like, so what, we're singing songs about ass now.
Just try to figure it out.
Which is like one of the only good points he makes in the entire movie that goes totally unexplored. Like he points out like, hey, you have changed a lot and you are, and he's saying that partially because he's jealous,
yeah,
but also there is an element to that character, yeah, where he's like a pure artist or whatever he thinks he is,
sure,
and he looks down on people who aren't like that.
He should have approached it differently,
right? Because also in that conversation he's telling her that she's ugly and that she has no talent
and that she's an embarrassment now because of how she's taken her opportunity and like used it to become this pop star, or just mostly, I don't know, I guess let go of her true inner musician to cater to people who will give her that kind of attention and money, right. And you know,
which isn't, I think that's a really interesting theme that they drop after that. Mm-hmm. Like that it's just because as flawed and bad and as much of a sign of like this is a toxic relationship as that scene is, he makes that point and she's like, no, that's my song, I wrote it, it's great. And then it's like, but we know that it's, I don't know. That was one thing where I was like, that would have been another interesting element to this character. But the story is so committed to making her a perfect angel that she's a boring character.
Sure. I would also real quick argue that there's some gratuitous nudity in that scene, because why does it take place in a bathtub? And then she stands up out of it and you like see her whole naked body, just a quick glimpse of it. But it's like,
that's a theme in the past Star is Borns where they hang out in bathtubs a lot.
Oh, okay.
Like the actual scene where she's putting on makeup on him, like that happened in the Streisand version. I think it happened in the Garland version.
It does happen in the Garland version.
Okay.
Also,
I would argue that we didn't necessarily need that nudity in that moment, but maybe I'm just a prude.
I didn't need it, but I can't wait to rent it on iTunes and pause it. So,
Another thing that I thought could have been explored far more that wasn't is the sort of pressure that is placed upon usually women in the entertainment industry to change the way they look and cater to a specific image that like whatever studio or record label is foisting upon them. Mm-hmm. Because early on in the film, Allie is talking to Jack. I think it's like the night that they first meet. And she's describing, she's like, oh, you know, I haven't gotten my break in this industry yet because you go into these rooms and there's all these men looking at you and they tell you that you sound great, but you don't look great. And she expresses some insecurities about her nose and stuff like that. So she's talking about this and then she gets her big break and it starts to work out. But then her manager is like, we need you to dye your hair blonde. And
it's
you
like,
know,
don't tell the dancers not to go on stage.
To build on that point, it was almost as if they couldn't acknowledge that her looks didn't matter until she got signed off by another man to be like, hey, well, I approve. And then they're like, oh, well, if you approve, then we approve.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the entertainment industry has like a very long, troubling history of like shaping women into, you know, the person that whatever studio wants them to be. For example, you can take a look at Judy Garland's career, where she was like forced pills to like keep her thin,
she
keep
was
her peppy,
like
and
8 years old,
right. And then you know, there's other examples.
Judy Garland was also famously molested by Louis B. Mayer himself.
Oh, geez.
When she was like 13 or 14 years old, so it's like, oh.
But yeah, they, different, you know, the studios, networks, record labels, you know, have an image in mind for, you know, whatever young ingenue they are trying to build into a superstar. And they basically decide, okay, here's what you look like. Here's what you're going to wear. Here's what you're going to act like. And I
you
think
have
the,
to have backup dancers.
Right. I think the movie could have explored that a lot more. But especially, that's not the story, I guess. So.
Especially because it's like you have Lady Gaga here. You have a fucking expert on this topic.
Uh-huh. Right.
In the room. She can tell you. But I don't know. Yeah. This is also, I believe, this is the only version of this script that is written entirely by men.
Mm.
There's usually at least one woman involved. But this is, there's a lot of themes that go like surface explored. Like, I think that they're trying to make a statement by like Lady Gaga's nose, but then she's famous anyways. And like, cool. But it's all so surface where she basically still ends up folding to all of their demands and that ends up working out in her favor. There's really no consequence for that happening. So like, what's the comment? Like, do it.
Right. There is a part
men
of
are smart.
To think that like she does kind of decide to just give in and take it into her own hands and be like, fine, I'm going to do all this, but I'm going to do it my own way. Like when they said, oh, make your hair platinum blonde, she's like, no, I'll do orange, which weird choice.
Yeah.
But there is things that I think like, oh, well, she was actually like, even though it wasn't necessarily the right choice and it was selling out, she made the choice to sell out, which is
Well, it's like, I don't even care that this character sells out. I'm not even critical of her for that, but it's like, they don't even talk about that. They don't even look at that. They just like, they're like, well, this is what happened. I'm like, but this is the star who's born. Why don't we get to hear what she think about nothing?
Right. It's still, the whole thing is, it's about this woman, but it the whole story unfolds from the point of view of
fucking Bradley,
the men around her. Yeah.
You have to see. I mean, you know, as much as I love seeing Bradley Cooper and Sam Elliott crying together in like three different scenes, it's like, okay, there's so much. I mean, and then the last big note I had for things that go unexplored in Allie's character is her relationship to her father, where there's a scene that I find so frustrating with Allie and Dice. Is towards the end of the movie, and it's after Jackson pee-peed himself, and now he's in rehab, and she's like, eat your supper, breakfast, sorry, I'm stressed, the whole thing. And Dice, it's already been acknowledged several times that Dice is also an alcoholic, right. Seems to have had a drinking problem. That tracks in terms of, like, you know, children of alcoholics very often end up with alcoholics, RIP, me, but
same though.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've got evidence in the room. But he starts to apologize to her. Dice starts to be like, I'm sorry I wasn't a better father to you. And I think her character acts, I mean, it makes sense that this would be a conversation that would happen, but in terms of moving the plot forward, I found it very frustrating because she's like, it's totally fine. It's totally fine. Mm-hmm. You were supportive of my music career. You carried my piano up the stairs once and you like paid attention to me in that way. It's fine. You didn't do anything. And then Dice goes, you're the best fucking person in the world. I was like, are you kidding me?
Something I know, you know, just throughout a lot of movies or just even in real life is that women, no matter what, even if we get the abuse and we have to take it, we still have to be the ones to make sure the men are okay.
Right.
It's like she's the one going through it, but she's still reassuring her father that he's okay, making sure he eats. It's like she literally had to go on the Grammy stage while her husband peed himself and she was like, we're having a lot of fun tonight. Like, that was the most cringeworthy moment where you're just trying to just like keep your shit together for your trash ass husband.
She's so accommodating. Yeah. And it is frustrating because it's like these people around you are fucking up and you're just taking care of them and like not reacting to it.
And if that's a part of who your character is, fine, but like show us that and show us that it causes her pain outside of like, you hurt me, which happens like three times.
Yeah, that moment where she forgave him, I was like, bitch, you need to slap him across the face. Because her just being like, you hurt me. And him being like, yeah, I think I said something.
Pecans. Like, you're just like, Jesus Christ. And that's like another, like, if this movie was a different kind of movie, it could have explored the dynamics of an abusive relationship, where it's not like if you're in an abusive relationship, it's out of the question that someone would say something really fucked up to you and you would say, I forgive you, to avoid further conflict. But it's presented to us as like they love each other and mm-hmm. they're working through some stuff. But that doesn't, I mean, in context, seem to be the reality of this relationship at all. Also, a question that goes back to our 50 Shades episode.
Ooh.
What amount of time does this movie take place in?
No idea.
That is a good question.
I think 2 years max.
The only time that we know has passed is when he says he's been at rehab for 2 months. That is the only time where they acknowledge time.
Time. Yeah, time and location are not important.
The 24 hours where they meet and then a few hours later she's on a private jet to go to his gig and sing with him on stage. It's crazy. We got to take a quick break, but let's explore this more when we return.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
I have a quick comment about Jackson Maine's character. Compared to past versions of this character, the first one is Norman Maine. I believe the second one is also Norman Maine. And then does Christofferson have like a weird...
He's like
John Norman
John
Howard.
Norman Howard, yeah.
They're all variants. And then Jackson Maine. All variants in the same name. Bradley Cooper's, I think one of the adjustments made that... I don't even know how I feel about it. I think it's just kind of like it makes sense, but it also creates a lot of problems that we've been talking about, is that Bradley's Jackson Maine is, of the four, by far the least despicable version of this character and by far the most lovable.
Yes.
Because the previous three are drunk in ways that are more violent.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the first one, she literally is hit.
Yeah.
In the Streisand one, he cheats on her. There's like more clear implications of like, this is not a good guy.
Yeah.
Which makes it more frustrating at the end where she's like, I love him. But also creates, I mean, a more discussable relationship or a more real relationship that could actually have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Where Bradley Cooper is sort of, Jackson Maine's presented as like, as far as we know, he never cheats on her.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we know, he is mean to her one time.
Right.
And there's a cake in the face, but he's pretty good-natured about everything, and he stays generally supportive. I feel like, just based on talking to my friends about it last night, because I was like, oh, I wonder like what the... Because I think if you left any of the first three, no matter how you feel about it, you leave being like, it sucks that he killed himself, but he was a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted... to hurt her.
Yeah.
You know, and in this one, I think you leave like, oh, Bradley Cooper, he was so nice, but so dead. Like, they make adjustments to the character that kind of neutralize it. It makes it harder to criticize him. And I don't even know how I feel about that, but it's just weird.
Right. A lot of that also feels like the reason Bradley Cooper's, like, the worse he gets is, you know, peeing on stage and, you know, berating her a little while she's in the bathtub. That also just feels like the industry working behind Bradley Cooper to be like, well, I mean, you'll be a shitty drunk, but we're not going to have you hit her because we don't want people to see you in that nature. You know, like, there's something
right.
working there where Bradley has that control mm-hmm. over how his character, like, how evil his character can be.
Sure.
So,
it's confusing. Like, you come away from watching this relationship different than any of the other three, where it's almost like cheesier and sweeter
mm-hmm.
than any of the other ones, where he's the best guy out of all of them, but he's still awful. And I don't even know. It's just like, it was a change that I get why, like, obviously I'm not like, man, I wish he hit Lady Gaga. But because, like, his alcoholism is portrayed in such a... It's more, like, goofy and embarrassing than dangerous and harmful.
Right.
In the way it's portrayed. It just kind of... It just makes it bizarre. And it's not... I mean, not that movies have to be a realistic portrayal of everything. But it just... The way that relationship is, you leave kind of still liking him in a way that I don't think that character's supposed to work.
And Anna, you touched on this where, like, him committing suicide is, like, this act of sacrifice, and he's doing it for her, and it also makes him seem like kind of a martyr and almost heroic.
Like, what an act of valor.
Which is, like, a pretty irresponsible way to frame suicidality. I do appreciate that the movie does acknowledge alcoholism as a disease, because addiction is a mental illness, and I think that a lot of people still don't quite realize that, and that's because of the stigma surrounding mental illness and things like that. So at least, I mean, could it have been explored more? Sure, especially because that's a huge component of this movie.
Right, there was just mostly one conversation with him and his line where rehab person.
And the line is, it's a disease.
Yeah.
I did love that. Lady Gaga should have broken up with him in that scene, but she doesn't. She just goes, it's a disease.
That's what is really frustrating to me about this movie, is that even though he is not the worst of all the renditions of this character, he still mistreats her. He still puts her in positions where she's constantly worrying and suffering and all this stuff. And like, and maybe this is just the cynic in me where I'm like, she should have fucking left him and like not put up with this bullshit. But like, I wish the ending that we saw to this movie is, rather than him killing himself, she leaves him and she goes on her own path. And
that
would
have been a great, like, updated version of how the story goes, because that is like a convention of he always kills himself. The first two, he runs into the ocean, drama, and then
third one, he like drives really crazy and then gets in a car accident or something.
I don't even think it's like technically a I don't know.
It's basically the boyfriend husband of Barbara Streisand, who's producing it, said he can't kill himself because that would make him weak. So it has to be like an unintentional death, which is just like, fuck off.
Yeah. So the third one isn't technically a suicide, but that is like canon to the story that he kills himself.
Right.
And then she goes to a function and says, I'm Mrs. Maine. And that's, we love that. That's when we find out what her last name is. Mm-hmm. It's the last name of the man.
Also, sorry, real quick, can I ask you, is this the only one that he goes to rehab?
No, usually he goes to jail.
Jail.
Usually he does. In the first
two. The Streisand
two,
one, I don't think he
I
does
don't know
anything.
The Streisand one. The Streisand one, I think, is the only version where he cheats on her.
Right.
And then in the first two, the husband does something drunk and disorderly and goes to jail, and she has to bail him out of jail. So I think that's the 2018 version of
They all
jail.
Have like a Grammy award show meltdown, though.
Oscars or Grammys,
yeah.
Okay. Bottom line is, updates were made to the various renditions of this story, so I think an update could have been done to the ending where he doesn't kill himself, and instead she's like, I'm not going to put up with your behavior anymore.
Absolutely.
And the shit that you put me through. Goodbye.
And then they meet up 10 years later, and he's like, I've been sober for 10 years.
Yeah,
just thinking
and then
about
they can
you.
Get back together and
song.
Fine. And then he says, whatever.
Hey.
Or they don't.
Yeah.
And then she does the thing where she traces her face. I keep doing that to my boyfriend's face. He doesn't like it.
Well, brag. That's
harassment. Thank you. I'm just like a face tracer. It's not good.
You can't just do that to someone who hasn't seen a Star Wars.
You can't just do that to someone in CVS when they're not expecting it. You cannot do that. It's bad. Just like a quick face trace.
Sure.
Yes, I totally agree that like a version of this where she leaves him would have been so effective. Or they're like, no, she absolutely cannot leave him, then explore why, other than she loves him.
They love each other.
That's sinister too. another thing that I was talking about with feminist icon Alice Wetterland, because it just I need to talk to everyone I encounter about A Star Is Born now.
Sure.
Is her take on, and I think this is a good point, about the nature of suicidality, of the way the British manager comes at Bradley Cooper's character at the end and is like, kill yourself.
He really does.
He literally, I mean, that's that whole scene. And she made the point of like, you know, someone with suicidal tendencies, it just skews what that actually is and makes it bizarre of like, you know, someone committing suicide very suddenly, it's usually prompted by something small. And like it wouldn't just be like, I don't know, spreading the idea that suicidality is spread by someone saying, kill yourself, is just a total misrepresentation of what that sort of depression is like. It's usually something little, like, and that could have so easily happened in that same scene where it seems more likely, like a manager like that would be like passive aggressive and pretending to be nice. And maybe that is something that triggers him because he understands. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This movie is over the top.
The movie, it does set up that he has had suicidal ideation before when he was a much younger guy. 13. But I think that it was not handled the most responsibly. I think that what happens at the end of this movie is like a very 1950s understanding of suicidal ideation.
The fucking cowboy hat. Is like,
well, that's the thing. Is, his character hasn't evolved from that era. Like, his character's still, like, the gruff guy who,
right.
I have to wear socks to my shoes, you know, I'm a man. Like, he doesn't...
No drink,
no socks.
Yeah, he's not...
Touché.
He's not progressive in any manner. Like, he's still the old guy who's like,
I've got
my morals.
Yeah, he didn't go to the women's march.
Yeah, no, he
Yeah, where's your fucking pussy hat? Yeah. Bradley, there, I...
Well, like that last shot of him, he like puts his hat down and he's like, all right, I'm laying this down for the last time.
It is such a, and he's drunk. He dies drunk.
Mm-hmm. Or is he on like pills? He definitely messed up.
Staggering. Yeah. He's staggering.
Staggering.
And then it ends with, this is pretty consistent across the four. The star whom is born is depressed and then is asked to do a function in which she sings a song, and then she introduces herself as Mrs. Mm-hmm. I think in the first two, it's Mrs. Norman Maine. Like, she doesn't even use any of her names. So this one, she says, my name is Allie Maine.
And defining herself as she relates to a man.
Right. I mean, which wouldn't bother me as much if we knew what her maiden name was.
I never had a last name before I met my husband. I was one of those people.
That is exactly what she says. Yeah. an Allie critique. Not a critique. World critique.
Sure.
There are no women in Allie's life.
No.
At all. And this is not addressed once.
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly enough, she relates most to the women in drag that she works with at the beginning. Are there men in drag? I said women in drag. Sorry.
drag queens. Yeah.
Drag queens, yeah.
Yes. She worked at the drag bar, and then it's clear that she's known the drag queens for a long time. And then she has, what's the name of her friend? Ramon is Allie's friend. Mm-hmm. He's an ally to Allie, if you will.
former Hamilton actor.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was...
Only the best in A Star Is Born.
Wow. Oh my God, wow. He's good for him.
And he's also, he's a part of that system that like pushes her to go and...
Yeah, he encourages her to like, hey, this guy who's creeping on you and like sending his driver into your house, go and
When she goes to his door when he's passed out, he's like, wake him up, shake your titties at him, which is like, that's not
he's an enabler.
To wake up.
He's maybe not a great friend, but there are no women in Allie. We don't know anything about Allie's mother.
Her mom.
In the earlier versions with Esther Blodgett, her mother is in various conditions of being alive, but she is acknowledged at any point. We don't know anything about Allie's mom.
No, never references the mom.
We do know what happens to Jackson's mom, but she's also killed off. Mm-hmm. And her death doesn't impact him the way his father's death does. It's just all the narrative impact is coming from men doing shitty stuff in real time or the shitty stuff men did back in the day, where so much of Jackson's alcoholism is attributed to the fact that he was dad's drinking buddy. Mm-hmm. And you want to knock one back, it'd be dad's drinking buddy.
And I do feel like maybe implied, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, I could have kept going. Oh,
yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Sam Elliott impression.
That he was dealing with tinnitus. Because they do say that at a very young age that he may have gotten it for putting his head in like, you know, the
gramophone.
So I feel like a little part of it is implied that he drinks a lot because of that tinnitus that he's just trying
not to hear
that tone.
Yeah.
I kept forgetting about me remembering he had tinnitus was in and out the whole movie. Because there were some points where you're hearing his tinnitus in the sound design. But then I was like, just feedback.
But half of his dialogue is like, what's that? Because he didn't hear what someone said to him. So like I was constantly reminded.
Also,
Sam Elliott's like, how's your tinnitus? And he's like, I'm here with my wife.
Yeah. He's like, the dude abides.
He does change the subject a lot where you're like, God, you're just like, fucking hell, okay. But I also was confused because he seemed like he got tinnitus at a young age. But then he also tells Allie he was born with an ear thing, so he couldn't hear.
Oh yeah.
So he's either like had an ear issue and then also got tinnitus, which is probably just fucking hell. I don't understand how that like if you can't even hear normal things, but then there's also like a ringing in your head at all times, mm-hmm. that's like a very probably unbearable situation that he should be wearing those like things that they were making for him.
Yeah.
Right.
But I guess it takes him out of the music that he's playing. See, that's the thing. He's making so many excuses to not get better that it's just like there's no justification like at all for like any of his behavior. It's just like you're just choosing to not deal with all your own issues, right. And then you bring Allie into your life and she loves you, so she's not gonna force you to deal with it. I mean, she makes points to be like, stop drinking, you smell like alcohol, we'll see how long it lasts till you drink again. Like, she does make jabs at him, but she doesn't fully stand up for herself until that moment they get in a fight when she's in the bath, and it's only because he calls her names and says all those rude things. Like, she barely, even when she saw he was drinking, she doesn't say anything. She kind of lets it go,
which it seems like is a carryover of how she treated her dad. And so it's like, I understand why Allie gets into this relationship for a few reasons. Is like, he has power in an area that can help her career. That's not the only reason she's in this relationship, but it's clearly a part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's predisposed to messy dudes who have alcohol issues. But, yeah, she, like, never – I don't know. There's just so – and then, Annie, you were saying earlier, like, the concept of his, like, suicide as sacrifice – where he kills himself so he won't embarrass her anymore.
Yeah, he's like letting her go and setting her free.
Right, like actually, you're actually causing her quite a bit of pain. And that's another like 2018 update that they try to make that kind of rings hollow. Is there's that scene with Lady Gaga and Sam Elliott. Imagine that. I never would think that would be a sentence. But that scene where Lady Gaga and Sam Elliott are crying and he's like, it's not your fault. It's Jack's fault and that's it. Which is like a clearer view of suicide than any of the past movies have offered.
Yeah.
But that's still not how it's presented when it happens. It's presented as a sacrifice. But then they're like, oh, but it's actually not. But then it's still, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What is this?
Yeah. Does anyone have any final points?
While I think it's a great film, I really enjoyed it, you just have to suspend your disbelief that, like, women are on the top. Like, it all is just, it's a fantasy of, like, oh, I was discovered and I made it and thank God for this man. Like, you really have to just let all that go to go watch the movie and then, you know, slowly think about it later. Because it does, the more you think about it, it's like, okay, like, this entire movie is happening because of a guy being like, oh, you're hot and a good singer. You know, like, that's his whole interest in her was like, first I believe it's because she was a good singer. And then as he got to know her, he's like, oh, well, I'm very attracted to you. And I'm going to make everything happen. And then it proceeds to be like only men around her. And that's a frustrating thing.
Right.
It's a great film if you just, you know, want to have a good time. But don't expect to get a lot of depth when it comes to strong women doing what they have to do.
No. Or even women interacting.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the matter at hand.
Wow.
Does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
Well,
sort of.
There is a conversation between a woman named Gail, who's like, I guess, like a stagehand or some like tour manager type
agree with Sophie, feminist icon Gail.
Feminist icon Gail shows up. Allie has known Jack for about 18 hours. She shows up at his gig.
Hi, I'm Gail.
Yeah, it's Gail meets them at the car that just brought them from the private plane or whatever to take them into the venue.
Yes.
And she goes, hi, I'm Gail. So we're all like, got her name. She's like, Lady Gaga's like, hey. And she's like, how was your flight? And then Lady Gaga's like, oh, it was great. And then she goes, oh, just leave your bags. And they're like, okay. And then she's like, come this way. And then she goes, wow, it's so big here. And then she goes like, ooh, watch out, because something's like coming out. And she's like, oh.
Gail's looking out.
Yeah.
I love Gail. I hope that actress just improvised the name Gail. And she's like, you know what? We want this movie to pass the test. I've read the whole script. She's like, hi, I'm Gail. Because it's not a character that necessarily makes sense to name, but she really goes for it. She leans in.
Because we never see that character again.
No.
No. So.
She stands next to Sam Elliott at the concert looking bored as fuck. Yeah.
Now, the question has been posed to us, if whenever Allie talks to the drag queens, does that pass the Bechdel test?
You know, I originally, when I first saw the movie, in my mind said, oh, that passed because she was talking to the drag queens. And then I was like, oh, wait, but does that count? And I don't know.
Drag queens? when they're in drag, you know, yeah. they're using she pronouns, you know, they're mm-hmm. using a lot of like feminized language. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, drag queens are men who identify as men who do drag.
I am tempted to outsource this one as well. If any listeners have better intel than us, none of us are drag queens, so probably you do. Let us know. For today, I feel like we're saying no
that
on
those scenes,
but they do happen. If whatever, it's a gray area. We're not totally sure. For sure, Gail passes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But also maybe the test could be your needs to be updated to be more inclusive where it's, you know, if two non-binary people talk to each other, could that pass the Bechdel test? Could, you know, a gender fluid person and a woman talk? Could that pass? So I think it's worth acknowledging that there could be some perhaps updates.
Let's call up our friend Allie Bechdel.
Yeah. There is a few seconds because I do think at one point towards the end of their interaction, she goes, he's very excited to see you or something like that.
Right.
So it like breaks that. It breaks the test and she goes back. They go back to referencing.
Well, also the whole context is like, hey, you're here to watch a man. Yeah. So if you factor in context, it's a little murkier. Great. But
But she does talk to one other woman who is Dave Chappelle's wife, whose name is never, ever acknowledged. And I believe the only thing they talk about is like, I'll get you a wedding dress to marry him, which is.
I would say also Dave Chappelle and his family are the few people of color in the whole movie. Otherwise, it's a largely white movie.
Of the four, it certainly does the best. You know, two straight white protagonists, that's not pushing much forward. But I think compared to other major releases, it does all right.
Yeah. Lady Gaga's Italian.
Why the butler out on the counter?
Andrew Dice Clay, one of his buddies, is an older actor. Who is that guy? He's a character
actor. I've seen him a million times. Yeah.
There's a lot of character actors. Like, I feel like I've seen Gail before. Gail looked familiar.
I feel like I've seen the woman who takes a picture of Bradley Cooper at the grocery store before.
Yes, she's also a character actress that I've seen places.
I've seen her a million places.
They're pulling a lot of like the like kind of famous that you see guest star in everything.
Yeah. There's a lot of vaguely familiar faces in this movie, including Bradley Cooper's dog. Feminist icon Bradley Cooper's dog.
Which is his real dog. Bradley Cooper's real dog.
And his real ear doctor.
Based on my understanding, Bradley cast a lot of people he knew. Like the drag queens he knew.
Those are my favorite scenes in the movie. Yeah. The first 30 minutes is fun. There's comedy. There's jokes. There's drag queens. I'm having a great time. And then it starts to... I could not be less thrilled.
Yeah, Allie is like neutralized through as the story goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose this is the time where we give our nipples.
Let's rate nipple-wise.
Yes, scale 1 or 0 to 5 on based on how it treats women.
That's right. I'm going to go with a solid 2, I suppose, where it's a story about a woman, but we don't get to know her that well. The story is told from a man's perspective, both in terms of the Jack main character and the director and writers and everything like that. So I think a lot of things that could have been, that like the opportunity was there for the movie to comment on, like the fact that women in entertainment are often held to this insane standard of beauty and image that gets touched on but doesn't go any further than that. Things like Bradley Cooper's character's creepy predatory behavior where she says, no, I can't come to your gig. And he's like, okay, I'll send my driver to pick you up.
You can shut up. I'll see you soon.
Is troubling. Maybe 2 is too generous because like I can't really think of anything that makes me think that anything was progressive about this movie. So, I like that there's representation on screen of drag queens. That's awesome.
Yes. It's a Lady Gaga movie.
Lady Gaga is a queer icon.
She is a literal queer icon. So, I think that with the exception of Janet Gaynor, every woman who's ever played this part is a queer icon.
Yeah.
Streisand and Garland, I mean, she's in good company.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
And that's one last thing I wanted to say about Allie's character that is like a standby of this character that makes Lady Gaga such good casting is she's supposed to be a character who is considered a little bit too old to be becoming famous. And she has an unconventional, like she's not like a model in terms of like, and that's why the nose comment and the whole bit. And that's
right.
Another,
yeah.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be like 30 or 31 or 2 or whatever. Like older. Right. Not older.
And
but
Lady
you know.
Gaga's 32.
Bitch, she's 32.
Bitch, she's 32.
Okay, here's what it... I'll give the movie 2 nipples because of the scene that's basically an exact replica of a scene from Titanic where in A Star Is Born... Ellie's behind, like, backstage. He's trying to coax her on stage to be like, sing your song or else I'll plagiarize it. And she's like, no, Jack. No, I couldn't possibly, Jack. And that basically happens in Titanic between Jack and Rose. The name is even the same with Jack. So, yeah, 2 nipples. I will give both nipples to Lady Gaga because we see her nips in this film.
We sure do. I'm going to give it this version 1.5.
Yeah.
I can't in good it's weird because I am going to see it for a third time, but, you know, I contain multitudes as well. I reserve the right. Yeah, no, it's like it is not a story that treats women well. It's never treated women well. And as to this version, kind of doesn't update it in the way it treats its female character really at all, which is a bummer because it is 2018 and there's in fact less women involved in the production of this movie than have been involved in past versions. So ultimately, I think by making the alcoholic character more lovable and making the female protagonist taking away her last name, we get no acknowledgement of how this toxic relationship is really affecting her. There are only men in her life that's never called attention to. It's like, and then there's a lot of like false setups, like you were saying, Caitlin, of like, she mentions that, you know, she's like not the perfect Western standard of beauty and that's held her back in the past, but that's never really commented on. And she doesn't seem to mind when they totally change her. And you know, there's a few moments of like, I don't know. But she always does it aside from her hair. She always goes through with it. We don't know how she feels about that.
Right.
And we don't know how she feels about her relationship. She refuses to tell us how she feels about her relationship with her father. And so the character is there. There's like an interesting character there, but we just don't get at her, which is too bad. So I will see it again this week. And I'm going to give it 1.5 nippies, give 1 to Lady Gaga, and then I'm going to give 1 to Bradley Cooper's dog.
Sure.
Oh, sorry, the other half.
I would give it 2. Mm-hmm. I would give an honorary 1 just for the cinematography. I thought it was just very well shot. No Streisand ass in this one, but you know what? I just really like that kind of aesthetic where when they shoot like music or just even concert that you feel like you're like breathing it, like they get all up in his business, which I think is an interesting choice. Actually, though, they don't really do it with Lady Gaga as much. They really get into like Bradley's like air, like you feel like you're like breathing the same areas when he's like playing. But that's from my film school background, you guys.
Wow.
But the real, I'm really giving it 2 nips because, like Jamie was saying, the whole like male savior vibe of like you needed a man to make it was kind of whatever. Like, that's not that interesting of a trope. Like, it's kind of like, okay. Like, it would have been interesting if, I don't know, they were a lesbian couple. Who knows? Like, they could have mixed it up in some way so it wasn't just like Bradley Cooper's chance to be Bradley Cooper. Like, and everyone kept being like, oh, how great he is in the film. Like, yeah, but he's a great actor. Like, we know he's going to be fine. Like, we know he'll be able to transform himself. Like, whatever. He'll play a DEA agent next time. It's fine. He was a different accent. Like, I'm not super moved by that. But, like, I was very impressed with Lady Gaga because I've never really seen her act before. Like, I didn't watch when she was in American Horror Story or anything like that. And I thought it was great that she, because I know I've read before in the past that she really struggled for a very long time. Like, I believe she was raped at 19 by a music industry person. And so she's admitted that her whole facade of how she would dress up was just like her hiding, like, from the world, and like covering up and wearing all this makeup and having all these wigs and having all this like crazy costumes was her distancing her real self from like the madness of like, you know, everyone and people coming at her. And so I thought this was like a very strong role for her to be like completely sans makeup, completely sans anything. And it, while it was, you know, it was acting her like growing into this pop star and you kind of see it happen, it was like a very interesting growth to see within a film that you don't really see. You never see like someone becomes like sell out so aggressively. Like, that trope is rarely done in films unless you're like watching films specifically about industries like acting or music or whatever. So that was cool to see. And I really appreciated Gaga's work. And I'm glad she kept the music as pure to Gaga as it could be. Like, her voice stayed. She didn't try and change it for anything like that. So that, when I first heard that, I was like, oh, that's Lady Gaga. Like, that's when you know it's Gaga, when she doesn't try and change her voice for anyone and she keeps it how it's always been. She's got that very powerful voice, and I was moved by her singing. I think she's an amazing artist and just a performer who knows what she's doing. And yes, I did just watch her Lady Gaga or 5'2" documentary, and I highly recommend it because she's so, I don't know, you really see her struggle. She has like aggressive like nerve pain that like ruins her everyday life, where she'll just be like in complete and total like just in a coma of pain and can't move. And it's like she has to deal with a lot of that. And it's all like from PTSD of being like raped and all the anxiety and trauma from her life that her entire body like spasms in complete pain. And she's like gotten through a lot of it now. But I don't know. She has a very interesting story. And I think it kind of parallels a lot of this storyline of a woman becoming less so she made herself, you know, by herself and not with the help of a man. But like there's an interesting juxtaposition of her turning into this person. And then, you know, I have this hope that Allie slowly turns back around and goes back to her original like artist, you know, self. So I give one nip to Lady Gaga and her performance in this film, and another nip to Shangela from the drag queen crew, who apparently had to be convinced by Lady Gaga to be in the film. And I think her character is so funny in the beginning as like this, you know, she's just not having it. She's not impressed. She's like, get the fuck out of here. I have shit to do. As she's so funny to the other drag queen who has him sign his tits. Like, he already signed your tits. Stop making him sing for you. And the fact that she was in the Virgil is huge.
Yes, we've shared a stage with Lady Gaga.
Yeah,
it was so great.
Anyway, that's two nips, one honorary for the cinematography, which really doesn't care. I mean, whatever.
One more point for Lady Gaga. As of today, she wrote a long op-ed about suicide, and doesn't directly say it's because of how it's portrayed in the movie, but did a great job.
Awesome.
So, you know, cleaning up a little bit of Coop's mess, maybe.
Sure.
So she's just the greatest.
She's an ally to us all.
Allie the ally.
Yeah. Well, Anna, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah, I've had a great time singing and dancing.
I've
been dancing this whole time.
Choreography.
Yeah. Where can people find you online? What would you like to plug?
You can listen to my podcast with Shireen Yunez, who did the Aladdin episode of show, Ethnically Ambiguous. We're on the How Stuff Works Network. You can find us on iTunes and whatever. I'm a producer here at How Stuff Works, so I also produce the Daily Zeitgeist, which is the daily news.
Daily Zeitgeist!
Yes, news and pop culture.
Well, sorry, everyone.
That's our theme song. you know, Jamie and Kaylin have both been on it. I also produce Couples Therapy, which is a really cool new show that I recommend checking out, hosted by Naomi Ekperrigan and Andy Beckerman.
Two-time alum of Pod.
And then I also host an independent podcast called Will You Accept This Rose? It's about the Bachelor franchise, and it's hosted by Arden Marine, and it's a really fun time, and we hang out with Batch peeps. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHossnieh.
Woo! You can follow us on social media at Bechdelcast. You can go to our website, Bechdelcast.com. There we have our merch store where you can get all kinds of wonderful goodies.
All
plus some new designs.
Check them out. Strong female protagonist.
Feminist icon Beetlejuice.
Team Dry Scabs and Team Wet Scabs.
We've sold one.
Oh,
we have sold one.
That's upsetting.
Also, I mean, yeah, keep buying our stuff. Also, go to our Patreon, aka Matreon, and subscribe to that. It's $5 a month. It gets you 2 bonus episodes every single month. Also, we have some live shows coming up.
Tour dates.
November 3rd, Philadelphia at the Good Good Comedy Theater.
Tour dates.
We have November 4th.
3 miles. Tour dates.
November 4th in Washington, D.C.
Tour dates.
As of this recording, the venue has not been confirmed, but keep on lookout for that.
Keep your ear to the ground for the tour dates.
November 5th, New York City is a part of the New York Comedy Festival.
Tour dates.
At Baby's All Right in Brooklyn, New York.
More like Tour's All Right, but we're on the tour.
So go to Bechdelcast.com. Our live appearances tab will have ticket links to all of those shows. So we hope to see you there
on our tour.
Otherwise, thanks for listening to our episode.
Hey.
What's all this butter doing here on the counter?
Hey, Anna.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get one more look at you.
Jamie.
Yeah.
I just want to have another look at you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Bye.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
We are coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.